Regular listeners to the PR Hub podcast could well have listened to episode 12, where we interviewed CIPR president-elect candidates Rachel Roberts and Peter Holt. And both of them gave us a really good and stirring introduction to why we should vote for them and what they would do if they were elected. And today, as we are recording this, the announcement has been made as the winner. John, what's the big reveal?
Well, the big reveal, as everybody should know by now, if they've checked their Twitters and Facebooks and TikToks, which seems quite appropriate for the upcoming episode, is that Rachel Roberts has been duly elected president-elect for 2021, become CIPR president in 2022. So huge congratulations to Rachel. You know, we know she's got fantastic ambition for the organization during her tenure the year after next. So condolences to Peter, of course. We're looking to get Rachel as well as 2021 president Mandy and 2020 president Jenny on the show early 2021, so we can chat to the three of them and sort of discuss all things CIPR and a whole lot more. But yeah, we just wanted to jump in and interrupt our own podcast to say
congratulations.
Bloody well done.
And on with the show.
I love this peek behind the curtain. This is great.
Very rarely do guests bring a drink. Oh, John has. What's that, John?
That's vodka.
I've got water as well, but I was like, I'm a little bit nervous because I've never been on like a podcast before. So I was like, I'll have a little bit of wine.
Hello and welcome to the PR Hub podcast. My name is Adam Tuckwell.
And I'm John Wilcox. Hi again, folks. Welcome to another episode. This week, we've got Louise Parker, who is Digital PR Director at PropellerNet down in Brighton, or as I like to think of Brighton, London on Sea, as I'm sure everybody thinks it as well. But Louise was on the show. We want to talk to her about a few things. One of them, a good question that Mr. Tucker's here raised a little while ago, which is, do PRs take themselves too seriously? I think it's safe to say, ads, that Louise doesn't. I mean, she's increasingly becoming known for her digital PR and PR themed TikToks. I thought the only things that TikToked, because I'm approaching 40, was a clock.
And let's jump into our interview with Louise. Welcome to the show, Louise Parker, PR account director at PropellerNet and the maker of, as your website describes, unbelievably niche PR TikTok videos, which you may well have seen on TikTok or indeed on other social channels, as we might talk about later. But Louise, welcome to the show. Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Louise, what have you been up to today as we enjoy what appears to be the sort of 50th week of lockdown? What have you been up to?
I mean, it really kind of blurs into one. It's actually quite busy at the moment. I mean, it's lovely and positive after, I mean, a very rocky, March, April, that kind of time, where I'm not gonna lie, I was twiddling my thumbs just a little bit in terms of work. We have kind of really come out of the other end of it well, but it does mean now I am very, very busy. So we're on the brink of like having a couple of new hires. So they start next week. So that's great, but right now is quite painful. So, I mean, work-wise, it's fun, but busy. And then personal-wise, I went to the post office, got caught in a traffic jam on the way there. And outside of work, that's been the highlight other than doing this. That's been my day.
Wonderful. We're definitely going to keep that in. So for listeners who are not familiar with you, where do you work and what do you do? What type of PR do you do? Or it's more digital, isn't it, than PR work?
It is indeed. So I work at PropellerNet, which is an agency in Brighton. It's a search agency, so we do organic search, so SEO, and we also do paid as well. And I am in the PR department. So I work with our SEO team to get some great online coverage, which gets our clients great links, which then in turn helps them to rank higher on Google, get more people to their website, get more people buying their stuff, make them more money, in essence. I've been doing that at PropellerNet for six-ish years now. I did have a brief stint at another agency. lovely. I know. I left and then came back, and they took me back, which was nice. It's kind of most of the time now I just say I've been there for 6 years in total. It's really fun. It's really enjoyable. Like, I love it. I'm a bit of a digital nerd, so it suits me really well to have the nice bits of PR, but then also getting to kind of nerd out throughout the internet.
So we had an interview with the co-founder of Rise at Seven, who are a digital and SEO agency, and we got quite a lot of engagement actually from having her on the pod, because quite a lot of our listeners and quite a lot of PRs quite traditionally either don't really get digital PR or don't understand how it works or what they do. What do you make of it? What drew you towards doing that rather than sort of traditional comms, or was it something that you sort of fell into?
I think like a lot of digital PR people, or maybe sometimes even SEO people, will say they often fell into it. It's not really something that, or the people who are working in the industry now, no one really kind of marked it out as something they particularly wanted to go into. I started, when I left uni, I for some reason decided that I wanted to do just PR. I think I just wanted to work for cool brands and do fun things, and PR seemed fun. So I ended up doing an internship and a grad scheme at Mischief. That was when I was in my early 20s. And it was like an amazing experience, and learned like so much, and actually learned what PR was, which I didn't really know, it turns out. When I actually got there, I was like, oh right, this is what it is. So that was really fun. But I kind of moved away from that side of things and went into like digital e-commerce, things like that, because I do nerd out quite a bit on the internet. For me, it is this really fun and engaging kind of part of PR at the moment, where you get the kind of the best of both worlds. So like, you get to be really creative, you get to do really cool ideas, you get to try loads of new things with most clients who are up for trying things that are gonna work for them, but then you also get the kind of benefits of having something a bit more measurable in the kind of digital side of things. So like being able to link it to kind of organic growth, and how much revenue you then made off the back of that, is something that I hadn't really seen in my previous time in PR, which it feels to me, I like to see what my work does, and that is like one of the really good ways of being able to measure it. So for me it works out. But in terms of other PRs kind of maybe not understanding it or like not really getting it so much, I kind of totally understand that, because it's a lot. It's not just, oh, it's PR but done digitally. Like, there is a lot of a kind of background understanding that you need from like SEO and things like that, and it's not impenetrable by any means. Like, I know it now, and you learn it like you learn anything else. But I think just to say like, oh, it's a digital version of PR is to really underplay it, and there's a lot more to it. And I think if you're not particularly interested in learning about more about it, it's not going to make so much sense.
Now that makes sense. I mean, spoiler alert, digital PR isn't getting a piece on The Guardian as opposed to in the print newspaper. That's not digital PR. for people who are wondering, I mean, I think you're absolutely correct with the whole sort of the data-led approach. I think traditionally, you know, there's a reason, thank God they are dying, but AVEs hung around for many, many years, like a zombie stat that the industry clung on to. And obviously, thankfully, they are dying a death, which is fantastic.
Are they bad now then, John?
I think so, Adam. Yes, I think.
But I've had clients who have still asked me for like, can you give me the AVE on this? Like, and it's kind of strange, because they've hired us as a digital PR agency. You know, they kind of know what we're about, but they also are like, but also, what's the AVE? Because it's a really big number that sounds really impressive. And if that has kind of worked before in terms of like impressing the people above you, and then yeah, it's kind of, you want to do more of that, please. It's hard to kind of take that big number away that makes your job sound really important.
And I guess that's the key thing there is being able to, well, first of all, how do you counter clients who ask for AVEs? And secondly, how do you then go about conveying that or convincing them that AVE is not a meaningful a statistic or figure, yeah. And that there are more meaningful ways to convince C-suite ultimately, which is what it's all about, lead generation, revenues, and all that sort of stuff. How do you sort of counter that with clients?
I mean, I've sat next to one of my colleagues, Hannah, on the phone. This is back when we were in an office, on the phone to a client, and you could just hear her side of the conversation. And she was, I mean, polite, but to the point, basically saying what you were saying in terms of, we have better ways to measure it now. This isn't really accurately reflect. There isn't much accuracy in it. We can give it to you if you really want to. We can go and like kind of ask precise or whatever, and kind of like, because I think we still get it on some of our clippings, like a kind of an amount on the top. But we have X, Y, and Z, which can show you that, like, or in 3 months' time, we will have X, Y, and Z, which will show you what our work has done. So in a way, we kind of politely say, we'd really rather prefer not to. No, thank you.
PR listeners, be more Hannah. Be more Hannah. You've got to respond. And I think that's really interesting, Louise, because you talked at the start about why digital PR excites you, because you can prove and demonstrate the impact of your work. And that is so important. I think back to my early days in PR, back when John and I worked together and before John joined and it all got very civilized, when we used to present reports which showed that our campaign was so successful, it reached everybody in the earth. We reached the population of the world with this piece of coverage. Isn't that brilliant? They're like, oh, well, why is no one buying it then? And it's like, oh, no, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. I think that grown-up nature and that acceleration through digital PR has just forced everybody else to think much more deeply about their reporting and how they measure and things. So be more Hannah.
Yeah. I feel like that.
and secondly, thank God the Barcelona principles were formed 10 years ago and we're all starting to make meaningful strides towards stamping on AVEs and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you've been at PropelNet for 6 or so years, you said. How has digital PR, how has your role changed over that 6 years? 6 years is a lifetime and a half in terms of the sort of current technology cycle. So how have you sort of seen that shift?
For sure. I feel like as a digital PR person, like 6 years is like I'm an old timer,
veteran is much better than old timer.
Old lady.
Don't forget, Louise, you're on TikTok. Don't write yourself off.
Myself young. Keep myself fresh. the beginning of when I first joined PropelNet, there was a kind of mixture of work that we were doing. So some of it was the digital PR that we know and love now. And some of it was just going to bloggers and giving them, which, you know, another type of PR, but going to bloggers, giving them product from X, Y, and Z brand, or kind of coming up with a campaign to work with them on and saying, great, can you do this? Can you give us a link at the end of it? And that was the deal. But I think a year into when I was working there, things kind of just started shifting in terms of what Google was saying. So Google made it a bit more clear that actually giving someone some product and then you getting a link from it is pretty much paying them for a link, which is against Google's guidelines anyway. So they kind of tightened up their kind of rules, but kind of their advice around that and said, like, look, this isn't really right. And then also we just saw our results were just really not doing what they used to. So whereas you could go and get like a bunch of blogger links previously and your rankings would do, you know, really increase and you'd get more traffic, it just wasn't happening anymore. And our kind of tech side of things were drilling into it and they were like, we really think that these websites aren't as good quality. There were some obviously great bloggers out there, but a lot of them that we were working with at the time, some of them weren't so great quality. And it just meant that it just wasn't working anymore. So there was no point in us doing it. So that's when we kind of really went towards digital PR even more so. I think PropelNet was one of the first agencies to start kind of hiring PR people and people who, you know, were from big agencies like in London, getting them down to Brighton and getting them to kind of understand SEO and understand how the two can merge a bit better. And and kind of haven't looked back since. I'd say our work has got a lot better. we've gone from kind of doing quite small scale things, which were, little press releases about like the best places to eat feta in Greece and stuff like that, to doing some really lovely campaigns, which are, have won like awards that like, you know, PR awards, not just SEO awards, but kind of can compete against other PR agencies as well. So it's come a long way, and it's been and what's been lovely is working there throughout the whole journey. So I can be like, well, I remember the day when we did X, Y, and Z, and what we learned from that has just improved our work. And I think what's really cool is that there are loads of other agencies, cool in one way, because it's like, yeah, there's lots of other people doing digital PR and doing great work. No, not so great in others, because it means more competition in terms of us winning business. But it has really, it helps in a way, because it means like you see other agencies doing amazing things. You're like, we can do that. We can do that even better. Like, and it kind of spurs you on. So it's nice having more competition in a way. So it's a good time to be in it, I would say.
That's fantastic. That's really good to hear. When you talk about it being a slightly more competitive arena, I think it's all the grads that come out of courses now for cons and people that are interested in PR will be born into this idea that digital PR is a critical part of people's skill set and they just need to get it. And actually the blurring of lines between traditional PRs and digital PRs and how that works with social agencies, SEO agencies, and PR agencies, and there's that blend. For the type of work that you do, Louise, is it primarily work where you work with the client solo, or do you work with and come across times where you're working with other agencies who specialize in other things? And therefore, I'm thinking of the examples of who am I allowed to contact? Am I allowed to go after everybody? Or are there particular journalists you're very precious of that we're not allowed to work with? And how do you manage those types of relationships?
Yeah, we have a couple of instances where we are kind of the only PR agency. Sometimes the client might have a more like corporate site agency that they use, but in terms of consumer, we're the only one. But there are a number of brands that we have. So like we work with Premier Inn, for example, and I'm probably going to put my foot in it now because I'm pretty sure they still work with Golan. I just haven't worked on the account for like a year or two, so who knows if it's moved. But
John's going to Google. Carry on.
But yes, and they work with Golan for their consumer PR, and they work with obviously like a bunch of other agencies for all sorts of advertising, social, like as you mentioned. Similarly, like I've worked with like Celebrity Cruises in the past, and they had a huge roster of other agencies. So it is like it gets a bad rap, basically, working with other PR agencies. I'm not going to lie. And actually, I've done a couple of TikToks about it because it's such a kind of known thing that a digital PR agency will come across. And you do get PR agencies that might say, we don't want you to go to any nationals. We don't want you to go to any travel journalists. We don't want you to, you know, because... Well, sometimes there's no reason, but sometimes it's because, yeah, we have a relationship, you know, sometimes it's just because. And it's really frustrating because not as any PR person would, if your media list is where you begin, like if you have a tiny media list, your results are going to be tiny or non-existent. So it's hard. And from our perspective, obviously like a big annoyance, but I do completely understand from another agency's point of view or an in-house PR department, why an agency who comes along who said they were going to do SEO and then suddenly they're like, hey, we want to talk to so-and-so at, you know, the Times about your brand. And you might be thinking, you know, who are you to go and talk to these people? And previously, and there still are some quite dodgy examples of normally kind of SEOs rather than digital PRs, but going to journalists and saying, hey, can you put a link in that one article where you mentioned our brand, and just badgering them and just like, you know, giving us a very bad rap, basically, because they're they're not doing PR, they're just trying to get a link from a good site, which is not what I do and not what I think anyone in digital PR would just how they would describe their job. So basically, I understand why other agencies might find it difficult. And what's worked with us is just really showcasing our work, building trust, not jumping in maybe, you know, right at the beginning and just kind of, you know, compromise. Say, okay, if we can't go to nationals, then we'll just build out a regional story, and then hopefully that does well, and we or offer to support them in something that they're working on, or you know, we've done things where we've kind of shown the value in their work, which they hadn't seen so much because they hadn't seen how their PR campaign had impacted or kind of SEO and things like that. So it's like hand on heart, like we have lovely relationships with the agencies that we work with, other agencies that we work with or other PR departments now. But a lot, some of them have been kind of softly make friends. We are good at our jobs. We promise. Like we're not going to ruin your kind of standing with any of these journalists when it comes to this client. So yeah, it's it is a challenge. And I think if you come on too strong right at the beginning, it can kind of spook a lot of people. And it's probably, yeah.
Well done, Louise. I think you answered that question wonderfully without slagging anyone off.
Diplomatic.
and if I may, they were certainly working with Golin up until October last year with their Pillow Fight Club.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
That's wonderful. Louise, you mentioned TikTok and you talked about some of the examples of where there might be tension between digital PRs and traditional PRs. So let's move on to TikTok, because we want to talk about personal brands. So you've obviously worked your way up in the industry and developed a bunch of experience. You've met a lot of people, you've got promoted, you've worked in a couple of different places, you had some really good training, and now you're where you're at. And then during lockdown, did you start it during lockdown or were you doing it before? So you came across our radar because of the witty and amusing, and how did your colleague describe it on your website, unbelievably niche. Tell us about that. So tell us firstly, for listeners who haven't seen them or haven't got a clue what we're talking about, what is it that you do and why do you do it?
I make TikToks around the subject of of PR.
That's what we call them.
Yeah, you call them TikToks. They are, you know, 15 second, 60 second videos. I mean, they can be of anything, but I primarily use it to do kind of somewhat funny kind of nods to scenarios that a lot of PR people might come across. And there are some things in there that are specifically around digital PR, but there are some things that are I think you know, any PR person would understand, like your account manager coming in and saying to you, you know, where's the coverage, when they know darn right that there isn't any and you feel terrible about it, or cliches of working in an agency and things like that. So it I don't really know why I started it, other than I guess being a bit bored and thought I'd give it a go. I must say, like, most of TikTok doesn't necessarily understand my TikToks because I think they are quite niche. But when I put them on LinkedIn and Twitter, they seem to go down pretty well because, you know, that's where my people are. That's where my PR people are. So they just understand what I'm talking about a bit more. Whereas I think 12-year-olds looking at them are like, what are you talking about? What's ABE?
What is link building? So have you had to explain to your company what the hell are you doing?
So no one took any notice until obviously other people started kind of retweeting them and stuff like that. And do you know what? It came at a time when it was, beginning of lockdown. It was like really scary as an agency. Like, we had a lot of travel clients who immediately couldn't make any money themselves. So, like, obviously, like, were pausing work with us. Like I did mention before, like, you know, we we're doing pretty well now. Like, we've come out the other side of it, but like, it was a rocky few months. So I think it provided some light relief in terms of we might have a little bit more time on our hands. So I was doing these videos, obviously it helped with our marketing. It really wasn't done to like help the agency or anything like that, because I'm not sure if it really does, but it did help get our name out there a bit more, and in a very subtle way. At least it kind of, by being able to take the piss out of stuff that happens, you know, within PR and within SEO and within digital PR, it kind of does subtly make the point that we know what we're talking about and like we know what we're doing. So I think they kind of like it. I don't think they knew what it was at the beginning. I think there was chatter about other people doing TikToks, in which everyone in the agency was like, God, no. Like, I think, yeah, it's solely me who has an interest in it. But yeah, they're behind it now. They liked the fact that was PropellerNet was mentioned, like in my bio. I remember hearing someone say that. They were like, oh, it's all right. She says she's from PropellerNet, so it's fine.
I'm imagining, it's a shame that we were in lockdown, because I'm imagining the internal meetings that would have taken place. It's like, has anyone seen what Louise is doing on TikTok? No, but I'm pretty sure I've heard of TikTok. My kids might use it. What is this? I think it's hilarious. So I think what is particularly amusing about the videos that you make is that they're so easily understandable for everyone who works in PR, because you are not afraid of it's not even taking the mickey out of what we do, but it's genuinely pulling on common threads which we all agree with and therefore find particularly amusing. So obviously you have been making these videos and are getting good traction for them. What has happened to you? Are you finding more people now follow you, more people engage with you, more people are looking at what you're doing?
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, no one knew who the hell I was before this. So I remember I mentioned that, so I've worked at PropellerNet a long time, but I did go to another agency, iProspect, lovely place, but went there for just about a year and then came back to PropellerNet. But my manager there, when I joined, said to me, your Twitter's shit. Like, and actually, like, it was a fair point. My Twitter was shit. There was barely anything on it. I was kind of somewhat using it for work, but not really. So I kind of started to make more of an effort when I was at this new agency. So this was about 2 years ago now. But I mean, no one really cared. Like, it was just another person on Twitter talking about digital PR saying, oh, I did this cool campaign. So in terms of how it's helped, I mean, it's something different. And luckily for me, TikTok is very easy to use. Like, I wouldn't have, you know, I can't put together videos. Like, I don't do any filming or, you know, but I just have a phone and it's really easy to edit and stuff like that. So it's really, it's piss easy for me to do. And my, yeah, like, it's, I guess because it's something slightly different. I'm fully aware that I'm riding a very short wave here, like of interest. Like this is, you know, there's going to come a point where people are like, I do not want to see any more videos from this woman, like, or just TikTok in general.
But the thing is that, you know, people could have said the same thing about early Twitter 11 years ago, right? And we all know what an utter cesspit that's become over the last decade. But you know, at one point it was actually genuinely a lovely place, as I'm sure TikTok is a lot of the time. Being an old man, I don't use it, but you know, how have you had, because of increased awareness, have you been able to use the platform essentially as an extra string to your bow with clients? You know, have you had clients discuss how TikTok can be part of their sort of their PR plans?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I've definitely been kind of mentioned by our agency. If someone ever mentions TikTok, it's like, well, we have someone who is on TikTok who also makes
resident
videos.
Expert. Yeah. Are you not just the resident TikTok expert?
I have to be like, I don't really know how to advise a strategy, what I think is particularly helpful for me, and I mean, I'm an internet nerd anyway, and like things like this just genuinely interest me. So, and something that is something that takes off, then I will want to be curious about it and find out what it is. But in terms of my job, like it is what the media is talking about as well. So it kind of, there was a part of me was like, I really should probably like look at what this is, what everyone's talking about. Like, and now we have like a few ideas that are going to utilize TikTok kind of data, if you will, to kind of create PR ideas. And it's, it makes it a really topical, you know, thing to talk about and go to the media with, and fits really nicely with some of our brands. So it's been like really helpful in that sense. We haven't had, we don't really cover off like, we do paid social. So definitely kind of paid social and ads on TikTok has been something that we are now looking at. But because it's not, because it's paid, it's not really my bag. But definitely in terms of using TikTok and the kind of trends within TikTok, to kind of inspire PR ideas and things like that has been really, really helpful. Like there was a whole trend around over lockdown around roller skates. Like roller skates became this whole thing that like kids wanted to have. Well, not even kids, I say teenagers, 20 somethings, with these kind of 70s roller skates, and they like sold out everywhere and it went mad. And I think if I hadn't have been on TikTok, that story would have completely passed me by. But so it's kind of like keeping me young.
Did you know about this, Adam? Because I knew nothing about this.
I'm not really big on roller skates.
I mean, I'm 6'4" and I've got legs up to my shoulders. Roller skates for me, I mean, I'm like Bambi on ice. It's not a good look. It's not a good look. So
maybe when lockdown 2 comes along, you know.
Yeah. There's the silver lining, people.
So Louise, how are you going to spend lockdown 2?
I don't know what social media platform we're going to give a go next.
So Louise, I find that interesting. I find that really interesting when you talk about how you started it. What I really like about it is the fact that you're prepared to be quite brave and bold. So you talk about when you worked at the other agency and somebody said that your Twitter was really boring. And and I think what they probably meant in the nicest possible way was that your Twitter was probably quite safe and your personal brand was quite safe. And we spend a lot of time in the PR industry making sure we basically stick the right side of controversial, really, and we're trying to be smart with what we do. So what should we do on our Twitter? Well, let's retweet something from PR Week because that'll be interesting. And that was a good campaign in Campaign magazine. Let's share that. But you've clearly gone out and been quite brave and bold, and you've been prepared to put yourself out there, and not just in terms of your opinions, but also your face and be on video and stuff, which is great. Do you think PR people generally take themselves far too seriously?
So my experience, I guess, would be, again, sorry, but like with digital PR people.
Do digital PR people?
It's more that I won't be able to reference kind of like big PR names and what they're like in terms of their personal brand. I would say digital PR people, like, not really. Like, digital PR people on Twitter are really ridiculously helpful. Like, you can put out a question. Like, I had a question about affiliate links or something like that, like affiliates. And I had like immediately like 6-7 people being like, this is my experience, this is how I've done it, oh, I found this. And it's just like, it's such a wealth of knowledge that people are willing to share. And they're your competitors, like, really. Like, it's, and so that I find is really, really lovely. So I think that, from what I've seen, like the way people use Twitter in the kind of digital PR sense is, yes, they will talk about their amazing campaigns, they will talk about their amazing results. I think some people would get a little bit annoyed by that potentially, because it can, you know, it can kind of smart sometimes. If you're having a really crap day at work and you're not getting any coverage, you're not getting any links, and you see someone's done amazingly well, like, it kind of will make you feel a bit meh, and you might be like, why are they talking like that on Twitter? And I do that as well when I've had great work, but equally I felt a bit crap based on it. So that would be like a kind of downer in terms of sometimes how Twitter can be used. But broadly speaking, most people are there to kind of congratulate people on their other great work, to share tips, to kind of advise, to, like, it's pretty nice. So I don't think they take themselves too seriously. I guess the only, like you said, people might be potentially a bit safe. And I think I'm safe, though. Like, there are loads of things which are like, I wish I could talk about that in TikToks, but I can't, because it will sound bad about a client, or it will sound bad about, you know, like, there's you know, if I did an after dark TikToks in terms of all the things like I wish I could say, like, I think I would get in trouble with my agency. I would, you know, probably not make any friends, and we wouldn't have very happy clients, because everyone has things that they are like wish they could have a bit to moan about. But so I guess, like, you know, it's kind of natural that you want to be a bit more kind of conservative about the things you're putting out there, because it is the internet. It will never go away. Like, once you've pressed send, and it's just out there, and you've kind of got to live by it, which is kind of scary. Now worries me about my videos a little bit.
No, that's really positive. Have you had any negatives then? Has anyone been? I mean, I guess you can't tell who's not engaged.
I mean,
are parents,
I started.
Are your parents proud?
Oh, my mum was excited that someone from Google had retweeted one of them. So that was pretty good. So she kind of, like, she understood that Google is a big deal for my job, and that someone retweeting it was a good thing. So that was really positive. I mean, I have seen some people just generally on Twitter saying stuff about SEO people on TikTok and stuff like that. And it's like, well, there's not many of us out there, guys. So I kind of know who you're talking about. But that's fine. It's all right. I mean, I just find it quite funny. Like, if and like I said, like, it's not everyone's cup of tea, and people might find it a bit passe after a while, and I might, that's fine. But for now, it's kind of keeping me entertained, and as long as people still fairly like it, then yeah, it's all right.
That's very cool. So a couple of weeks ago, the Drum Awards announced its various shortlists, and Propelnet has been nominated in the best agency for search optimization, conversion, and contest strategy and creation. Oh my god, how many awards is that?
Is that a lot of awards, or just one really broad one?
Search optimization and conversion and search optimization and conversion and contest strategy and creation. I presume, yeah. It's two.
Yeah, I think, is there another one? I think it was just agency as well, maybe.
Oh, maybe best there are agency. Three awards.
Oh, you know, maybe just another norm.
just another day at Propelnet. Multi-award nominated Propelnet. So what campaigns have you guys been nominated for in the Drum Awards? What makes them sort of stand out, do you think?
Oh, so actually, I think those Drum Awards were based on the Drum Recommend. So it's where you get your clients to kind of review you, and then kind of, like, based on that, I think they, like, pick them out, which is kind of cool, because it means you don't have to write any award entries, which are a ball ache. And then,
thank god, I hate that.
They're really not fun. So that's like positive. And then also, obviously, it's very nice to just be based on what other people have said about you. So that's kind of, like, generally. But I mean, the thing over lockdown, so the last 6 months and stuff like that, like, we've done some really cool stuff, but it's been very agile. That's such a buzzword, but like, it's been
okay,
stuff
you've had
that,
to pivot. You've had yeah. to pivot.
I had to pivot a lot. It's so basically our ideas, where maybe sometimes, you know, they might be planned 3 months or in advance, they're more planned, I don't know, 3 weeks in advance. And they are stories that don't cost the world, so that if, you know, the media goes mad again over, well, who knows what now, then it's not as bad a loss as if you've, you know, done this huge campaign that then no one cares about because the news cycle is completely gone. So, like, we've done some cool stuff around, so we have travel clients that are still working with us. So we've done kind of stories with them around 2021 holidays, and using kind of search data to find out what are the most searched for destinations for next year, because obviously this year is basically a write-off. Who knows about next year now, to be fair. But that was like really cheap to do. Like, search data is free. Do a kind of nice like map graphic, and it's applicable around the world. We did it kind of, we used data for every single country. So that, like, went down really, really well, and it's like a positive story for travel journalists, which is also fairly rare at the moment. We've done some really fun stuff with a lingerie brand called Pour Moi. Them as an e-com brand, and also, you know, do loungewear and things like that. So they've done really quite well over lockdown, so they are keen for lots of work with us, which is great. But we've done some fun stuff with them around finding out the most listened to songs during sex, both in a couple and on your own, because people create Spotify playlists of named like date night and sex playlists, but also solo sex playlist, masturbation playlist.
Not to self. I'm going to make my playlists private on Spotify from now on.
So that was fun, and all, you know, went down well.
I've been checking Louise's internet history since she's been at home.
Please don't. It's terrifying. So yeah, I mean, like, it's been cool. Like, and I think for the 6 month period, I think we've done really well of creating stories that are quick to turn around, relatively cheap to put together, but, you know, either are really kind of topical or they are something that, you know, like sex stories are always really fun and people are always interested in that kind of stuff. So that's done really, really well. I think as a team, we are talking about it like, oh my God, if we do one more Google search based idea, like we're really running dry in terms of how we can use these kind of cheaper formats. Like we're really ready to use some, get some third party costs going and get to like do some like other stuff outside of like just kind of the smaller stuff. But it's worked and it's worked for now and it's helped us, you know, actually continue as an agency and grow and win some new clients. And so that's really positive. So
that's great.
I mean, that's not what we're nominated for in terms of awards, but hopefully in give it 6 months and maybe we'll be nominated for some of that when it comes to awards.
That's really great. I mean, I know Adam dropped the horrendously sort of working environment buzzword of, you know, agile.
I went with pivot.
The pair of you are as bad as each other.
Just double check your notebook, John.
Actually, I had the word trends down. Did somebody say trends? I mean, well, you're quite right. 2020 has been a complete washout, and I think any sort of agency that's coming out to the other side of this has done tremendously well, which is excellent. We are looking ahead already to 2021. As I said earlier on, digital PR has rapidly evolved over just the last sort of few years. What sort of trends are you seeing in 2021 in the possible direction that digital PR could take in a hopefully post-COVID world?
This sounds kind of strange, actually, but like there'll be a few things in that I think digital PR people are starting to do more of now, which people who've worked in traditional PR, normal PR, whatever, will be like, yeah, obviously. But there's things like having like a press office function where you are, you know, reacting to the news and providing kind of comment based on things that are breaking in that morning that are kind of, you know, applicable to your client. Even, you know, like small stories like newsjacking and all that kind of stuff, which is just like a PR agency's like normal day to day. I think more and more like digital PR agencies are looking to, you know, what else can we utilize to make sure that we can be getting links and coverage all the time. So it won't sound groundbreaking to a seasoned PR professional, but for us it's kind of like, yeah, acting more like your day-to-day PR, but just doing it with a much more kind of link and digital head on. I do think there's like a huge opportunity when it comes to traditional PR agencies. I shouldn't really say this because I don't want people to get ideas, but like if they just get some links.
You're being really diplomatic as well by saying, you know, that that actually this is these are just techniques and things that you could replicate and anyone could do as long as you're prepared to invest in understanding it and how it works. But please don't do it because you'll take my business.
I mean, it's just like I think as digital PRs we're getting like much more an emboldened, that's not quite the right thing, but basically just I think there was a lot to prove like in the first years of digital PR where it was like you know, getting like a national piece of coverage was like, oh my God, we've got a national piece of coverage. Like, you know, you'd get like one a month and it would be like, this is incredible. And you stick it up on the wall. Like, but you go to, you know, anywhere in any other kind of PR agency, that's obviously just like a given. But like, so there was a long time, I think, and it's still kind of, I think a lot of the time that is happening on Twitter when people are sharing their campaigns, they're kind of, and I do the same, like proving like, you know, we can compete with, we can do the type of creative campaigns that other PR agencies do. Like, we aren't just these kind of like weird tech nerds who go and bug journalists and piss them off by asking for links and stuff like that. Like, we are like PRs in our own right. We, you know, so I think it's oh God, I feel like I completely forgot my point.
No, that's fine, because that's a really good point for me to just interject and say, as a slightly older PR practitioner, I love the idea of a young up and coming digital PR person printing out a piece of coverage and putting it on a wall.
Seriously, like, I mean, it'll be gathering dust in our office right now, but because no one is there. But yeah, like it used to be like, well, it still is really exciting when you get any coverage on amazing places, but like the bar is being raised all the time with all these other great agencies that are out as well, and it makes for, like, I keep on saying this, but like, it's a very exciting time at the moment to be a digital PR. It's very cool.
It is, it's a very exciting time to be in the digital PR sector, but as you've already identified, it's a really difficult time for lots of people, and we have seen lots of agencies go under, and as the furlough scheme comes to an end, we might see quite a lot of people being made redundant, and very talented people sort of going onto the job market. And I think especially as this lockdown continues, it's going to get grimmer for some people. So if there are highly talented, young, dynamic, forward-thinking people out there who are concerned about where their next job's going to come from, or how they're going to position themselves differently, based on your personal brand building experience, what advice would you have for people? What would you recommend they do? Obviously, don't be shit at Twitter is a starting point, but what do you recommend for people that are keen on utilizing a personal brand, or at least getting an understanding that actually they need to put themselves out there in a particular way?
It's a tough old time at the moment, like, and I do feel for anyone who is like looking for a job currently. Although obviously like building a personal brand or whatever is can really help, because you can start to really showcase your work. Like, you can start to, you know, put across a point of view, but it's not the be all and end all, because like, I know some of the best people that I work with don't have any Twitter presence, don't have any LinkedIn presence or anything. Like, it doesn't, just because you're shit at Twitter or whatever, doesn't mean that you're bad at your job. And I think like sometimes it can feel like this added thing to be like, oh God, now I've got to like have thousands.
I've got to be good at this as well.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, when do you do that? Like, is that in your spare time? And I think to do it, you have to want to do it. Like, I want to make TikTok videos. I don't necessarily want to write big kind of essays on LinkedIn, which is other people's bags, but like, that's just not me. Or I don't want to write blog posts necessarily. I just don't have the patience for it. So like,
we don't either. This is why we do a podcast every fortnight.
Choose your medium. Like, so yeah, like, find something that if you find something that you find interesting and fun, go with it, roll with it. Like, that's fantastic. But if there's just nothing that grabs you, then it's like, don't like pressurize it. And also, I think sometimes you can tell if someone's really not into it and they're being forced to tweet all the time, they're like, oh God. Like, I think you can sometimes realize that that's happening. But I mean, there are like, obviously social media is like a big thing, but like, there's some great people who do kind of newsletters and things like that. That is like a huge amount of work. So I'm not saying that's an easy thing, but that is like a really nice thing to put together, or kind of blogs around PR as well. Podcasts, like you said, like it isn't, if kind of putting your face out there isn't your thing, then I wouldn't worry too much. And I don't know, I'm kind of in two minds about this whole, like, when you need to apply to a job, you know, when people are saying like, oh, do something that makes you stand out, like, you know, post your CV on a pigeon or something, like, you know what I mean? Like, do all these like crazy things. And like, on one hand, totally, like, these places must get, well, they do get loads of CVs, and that would help you like stand out. But like, I don't know, again, it's just, it
doesn't show you're good at your job.
Yeah, like, it's like, I remember hearing something about like someone who wrote their CV on a shoe, and I was like, well, that can't be a very long CV. Like, are you good? So like, I just.
Whereas if it had been a roller skate, it would have been bang on trend.
So I do. I like. I think again, and also if it's your personality to do something really creative when you apply for a role and because you want to stick out and stuff like that, then that's fine. But if you're kind of forcing it just because you've been told, oh, actually, I can't just send a CV, I have to do something mad, then if that's not you and that kind and that's what they expect and that's what they're looking for, then that's probably not the right fit for you. Like it's a real tough one. Like, I mean, I've got a few jobs in my time, and I've never had to do anything too crazy. It's I think often it's about like the fit, where I guess once you get into interview stage, and that's like a hurdle in itself. But like, if you can just, you know, try and put your personality across in whatever form that is, even if that's just in a well-written cover letter or email or something like that, or showing an interest in previous work that they've done and all that kind of stuff, then that would be helpful. But like, I guess I've had an instance, I was made redundant like a few years back. And so you do have time on your hands. So it can, you know, if you want to give stuff a go, then that is like a, I guess you can kind of think of it as an opportunity to, you know, give Twitter a go, give writing a newsletter a go, writing blogs or whatever that might be, and just try out a few things and see if you like any of them. And if you don't like any of them, that's also fine. I'm sure you will find like a good place to work eventually. Because, yeah, like you said, just because you have a lovely personal brand and stuff like that doesn't necessarily mean that you're great at your job. And that's like the most important thing.
Wonderful. Louise, thank you so much for that. If people are interested in following you and watching these amazing videos that you're creating, where should people go to find those?
Okay. So you could go to TikTok if you have TikTok, you know, while it's still allowed.
People do. People do.
It's just quite popular. So my username on there is Louise_digitalPR. But I also post them on Twitter and LinkedIn, if that is your thing. LinkedIn's just my name. And then Twitter is Louise V. Parker.
That's fantastic. Louise, thank you very, very much. Absolute joy to speak with you on the podcast. And thank you very much for jumping on.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Louise Parker for joining the show. We hope you enjoy it, and we hope you go straight away to TikTok, Louise_digitalPR, and go and marvel at her creativity. If you enjoyed the show, do follow her on social, but please also do follow us and get in touch. And if you enjoy the podcast, please do rate and subscribe us.
Yeah, absolutely. As always, you can tweet at us. You can tweet at us on Twitter at PR Hub. I'm at John_Wilcox_. He's at Adam Tuckwell. And join us very, very soon for another episode of the PR Hub podcast.